This conference will now be recorded.
Gotta get to my other screen here a second, just a minute. Okay, it is Thursday, April 23rd, and it is 5 o'clock, and I will call the Finance Committee meeting to order. And we do not have public comment listed on there, but I don't think we have any public on here other than Shelby. So Shelby, is there anything you want to say to us?
No, I'm good, thank you.
All right, good. So I've just got a couple of comments I want to make before we start on the action items. And I will tell you, I'm choosing to take the high road tonight. But as chair of the Finance Committee and as Finance Committee members and finance staff and other staff, I just want to say thank you. I think that we are trying to get to information that will help us to make the best informed decision. Maybe we're taking a conservative approach to looking at the information, but I think that's smart on our behalf to have all of the information to make those decisions. I also am very open to that this is going to be a council decision, and I am glad that we are moving forward with having a Finance Committee full council meeting. I think the information that we get tonight will help us, and I'm going to ask each of you to see if there's anything else you want that will help to bring information forward either tonight or by letting Brian Steve know with that. I think it is important that we recognize that we shouldn't have to be digging for information at this time, that there is a responsibility to have open and direct communication. I also want to address the timing. Yes, it's difficult to get the agenda out. And I would just say that if we had gotten the agenda last Thursday or Friday, the information on it would have been totally different, and we probably wouldn't have been able to move ahead with some of it. So I think that we need to be flexible enough and available enough to receive information later and to be open to that. I believe staff is doing their best to get it to us, and I know that they are addressing that timely manner. And so with that, I'm just gonna say thank you, and let's move forward. And I think our first agenda item is an action item. And I don't know, is it Steve or Brian? Which one of you are taking it?
Audrey, I can take the item. And I just wanna mention, I see Rick has joined us now as well.
Oh, so wait, let's stop. Okay. I do roll call. So, Steve, will you do roll call?
Certainly. Councilman Nelson.
I'm here.
Councilman Osmus.
Here.
Councilman Plowman.
Here.
Councilman Fagerly.
Here.
Administrator Grommets.
Here.
Shelby from the West Central Tribune.
Here.
Doug Green from Baker Tilly. And Steve Oaken, City Finance Director.
Thank you, Steve. Sorry, I forgot to do that. I think that's two meetings in a row. I apologize. Go ahead with your action item.
Okay, and I think as Doug kind of alluded to, we've all been now in practice of doing these meetings, a number of them. So as we held our meeting last time, if you have a comment or want the chair to call on you, if you just unmute your mic, that would work, I think, is the protocol that we've used in the past. The first item on our agenda is the 2020 improvement projects. There are two action items that we're looking for tonight. The City Council ordered the 2020 improvement projects on a hearing on March 2nd. The bids were actually opened on Monday, the 20th of this week. And the accessible street improvement projects are incurring and will be brought forth to the council. And so the two action items that we need to do that have been overlooked is the intent to reimburse resolution. The intent to reimburse resolution basically allows the city to reimburse itself for any costs that it may incur prior to the sale of the bonds. Now, the bonds have been communicated with Baker Tilly that we will start that process at our next finance meeting of May 7th. That would be the first action item. And the second action item that we would need is a resolution that would set the preliminary budget. I don't know, Audrey, do you want me to go into that now? And then we'll take both action items when I'm done.
I think it would be helpful for us to know the whole picture before we vote on the first one.
Okay. The second action item of setting the preliminary budget was included in the Dropbox and on the city's internet. And it's a total project of $3.4 million, a little over $3.4 million. The financing of that is anticipated to require a little over $1.9 million of bonds, a little over $1.1 million in municipal state aid dollars. Those are for basically First Street and to finish Civic Center Drive. Municipal utilities has some water costs that they will be funding at a little over $65,000. And the waste treatment plant has, again, some sewer mains in the area of a little under $240,000 for the total project of $3.4 million. The bonds that we are having the resolution for the intent to reimburse of $1.9 million at this point is expected to be paid for by about $740,000 worth of special assessments, and $1.2 million would be paid from the Community Investment Fund over a period of 10 years. These are preliminary numbers at this point, once the assessments are calculated, which they are being calculated now, those numbers may change, but it would only change the amount or the portion of the bond that is being paid for. So the two action items again are the resolution for the intent to reimburse and setting a preliminary budget for the 2020 street improvement bonds.
Okay, I don't know if it makes a difference, but the first one on the sheet is I'll make a motion to adopt the resolution of the 2020 improvement project preliminary budget.
Okay, thank you, Andrew. Julie made the motion, Andrew seconded. Is there any discussion, any questions? I will ask the question, Steve. I know, I think Sean Christensen made this statement last night, but it would be good, I think, that they were very pleased with how the bids came in. I don't know if anybody wants to comment on where we're at and our ability to move forward.
Yes, I believe, and Brian, you can add to my comments as well, but I believe the bids came in about 25% under what the engineer's estimates were, and the 2020 capital improvement budget included the $3 million, $2 million of bonding and $1 million of state aid, and then it also had $200,000 in there for 19th Avenue. So we are within what the capital improvement budget has for these projects.
All right, is there any further discussion? Any other questions? If not, Steve, would you do the roll call?
Councilman Osmus.
Aye.
Councilman Plowman.
Aye.
Councilman Fagerly.
Aye.
Councilman Nelson.
Aye.
4 ayes, 0 nays.
All right. Would someone else like to make a motion for the resolution of intent to reimburse for the costs incurred?
So moved.
Second.
All right, Andrew. Thank you. Andrew Plowman made the motion. Julie Osmus was seconded. Is there any questions or discussion on that? Go ahead, Andrew.
Thank you, Councilwoman Nelson. Just question for Mr. Okins. When we talk about assessments, we are anticipating and kind of predicting what that revenue will be. What happens in the event, because it's a longer term collection of funds. What happens in the event that those dollar figures change or are unobtainable for whatever reason? And I know, you know, the likelihood, you can say whatever it is, but we could have also said the likelihood of being where we are today, 6 months ago, impossible. But just wondering what happens if those dollar figures change 2-3 years down the road.
Assessments that go to the assessment hearing and the council adopt are the assessments that get certified to the county for payment. We have been in contact with legal counsel as far as some questions in regards to interest and those types of things. So those would be addressed at the assessment hearing. That information would be provided to the council prior to that. Whatever assessments are certified from the assessment hearing, and if they become delinquent or non-paid, the community investment fund basically buys that receivable and cash flows that, as we've talked about in the past, as far as ag exemptions or those types of assessments. So if there is a surge of delinquency or that type of stuff, the community investment fund would basically cash flow that until they could be collected. I don't know if that answered your question, but I'll answer anything additional if I can clarify it.
Andrew, Councilmember Plowman, do you have any other questions on that?
Just a comment that's pretty much what I'm getting at is what happens in the case of worst case scenario, that there's, you know, say there's a rash of foreclosures or inability to pay or, you know, all different things like we said that don't typically happen and you wouldn't typically expect to happen, and the likelihood of those happening probably small. But what would be our liability, and do we have the contingency funds in place to cover those types of things? And I think he did a good job at answering that. I'd be interested to hear what our administrator has to say as well.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair and council members, committee members. Once the assessments are levied against the property, they're there. And if they do happen to go delinquent, I believe it's a 5-year term where before the property gets transferred to the state of Minnesota for non-payment of taxes or amounts due. At that point in time, in those years, the city would have paid for those expenses, as Mr. Okins commented. We'll take care of those with the anticipation that when the property eventually sells, we'll get that back, because those will be back taxes, back assessments. The caveat to that is if it goes tax forfeiture, technically everything goes away and it's wiped clean of everything. So you may or may not get that money back in that situation, worst case scenario. But usually the county works with you, because the county ends up acting on behalf of the state of Minnesota and then sells that property. And every county I've ever been in, they've always said, okay, if this is the process, when we sell that property, you'll get your special assessments back first. And then they sort out delinquent property taxes. I don't, you know, not having been around in Canyon High County, but I would anticipate that since most counties act that way, that they would also do the same thing. But that's left up to them how they deal with it. And so worst case scenario, we're on the hook for, you know, 5 years in kind, and then it goes away. So the more we can get people to pay their assessments, the less potential there is for the city to have to pick up the cost.
Go ahead, Mr. Elkins.
Yeah, just to expand on that a little bit, if the council members remember, we just have really only had one area where delinquents have become delinquent and the properties were tax forfeited, and that's the Oslo Meadows addition, which was just recently purchased. And the county does contact the city when there is a interested buyer, and the price that is put on the property is normally the outstanding assessments. And if the value is less than the outstanding assessments, then the difference is recertified at the time, and the property owners buying the tax forfeited property are aware of that when they purchase it.
All right. Councilmember Fagerly, I can't see you. Do you have any questions?
I can see myself and I can see all of you.
Good.
I have no idea. Well, yeah. And if it's a foreclosure because they didn't pay the lender, those taxes go back and have to be paid after it's sold by the lender. So we always get the assessments back. So,
Councilmember Osmus, any questions? Okay, I do have two questions. I remember our administrator making a comment last year about a concern about the calculation of the assessments. And I don't know whether that's something that can be answered now or if it's something that we could, if there's any concerns with that. That's my first question. Maybe I'll quit and let him answer that one first.
I think after the discussion of special assessments last year, we looked at our special assessing policy, you know, for uniformity application to everybody equally. And we'll be looking at that again as we go through the process to make sure that, you know, everybody's treated the same. So there's no, you know, special discounts or, you know, or no special increases just because of the location. So, you know, we're gonna abide by it until it's such time that it gets changed. But we'll be looking at that again to see if there are any things that we need to, you know, bring back to the city council to address.
So that basically will be addressed before the assessments are done this year?
I think we're going to go through the assessments and see if there's any issues that come out of it that are strange or unusual. I know we've got some language in there that talks about that, you know, let's say it's a commercial property that they're supposed to pay 100%. That may not necessarily be what we're doing, but we're being consistent through the years. So I think we need to review that one more time as we go through this process and say, should our policy be reflective of what we're actually doing? And I think the answer is yes. So let's look at it this time, and we'll come back with a recommendation if there's one needed.
Okay, thank you. My second question is, I know that we had been concerned about our ability to have enough funds in our community investment process to do this. And so just a question, did the bids just come in good enough that ended up why we ended up being able to do the projects as they were presented? I'll ask Mr. Olkins.
Yeah, the bids came in and came in line with what was in the capital improvement program. What was initially being estimated by the engineering department was, again, 25% higher than where the bids ended up. So that would have caused some restructuring of what we would have had to do with the 10-year program and would have unload some of the debt. But with this coming in at where the capital improvement program was, it will fit into the program, the 10-year program.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Olkins. Is there any other questions? Hearing none, I will call for the roll call.
Councilman Plowman.
Aye.
Councilman Fagerly.
Aye.
And we can see you now, by the way, Rick.
Good.
I can't answer. Councilman Nelson.
Aye.
Councilman Osmus.
Aye.
Four ayes, zero nays.
Audrey, unmute.
Sorry, I put myself on mute instead of doing it, so I apologize. Our next item is the discussion item for local option sales tax projects. And I'm not sure, is that you going to be you, Brian?
Yes, I think I'll start that, and Steve can jump in anytime when he gets to that point.
Okay, thank you.
Anytime he wants to correct me, he can just jump right in. All right, there was one correction on my original correspondence. I talked about, a 14-year bond issue, and I believe in discussions with Steve that it really is a 13-year bond issue. So having said that, that actually makes things worse in the long run. So generally speaking, what I tried to put together was just a thumbnail sketch of what our anticipated revenues and expenditures are on all the projects as it pertains to the first year. Now, understanding the first year was October, November, December of last year, and all of 2020. And so we actually have 13 months worth of potential revenue. But I wanted to alert everyone to the fact that there's probably three things going on. The first thing is that we may have overestimated the amount of revenue we would be getting on the half-cent sales tax. So if we were thinking we were getting $250,000 a month, and if the economy was great, I think we would still be less than that. Maybe it's 180, I don't really know, but we are definitely enough below the county. If we were thinking we were going to capture 80% of the county sales tax that they collect, and we're down in the 63%, that's a problem. Okay. The second thing, obviously, is the economy we find ourselves in, that obviously retail sales have dropped through the floor, and our anticipated income or revenue stream from the local option sales tax will be down because of that. So that's whammy number two. I think take into account that there was some discussion that I've heard that through the city council, that there was a opportunity that we were going to pay cash for like Robbins Island project. And that means to pay cash, we either do the project and then pay monthly ourselves back, or we capture all the revenue and then pay cash for it. The first year we as you see in the financial thumbnail sketch of what I put together with the help of Steve, was that if you add up all of the soft costs for the projects that we're currently working on, Robbins Island, Swanson, Stormwater, Recreation Field, and also it was on the first page, City Hall Community Center, that just the soft costs alone for that will amount to about $1.8 million. And that's not the construction manager part. And I want to explain that. And that is the architect's activities and costs come up front, and then construction manager costs come during the construction of the project. Okay, so if we're just getting plans and specs prepared, that's the upfront architect, and there might be 10% of construction manager money, but there's also 10% less architect because they will in fact be charging out some costs during the construction phase also. So 85% architect money, 10% construction manager money, and that gets us pretty close to half of the anticipated soft costs. Then if you add in the hard costs, which really is the stormwater project running roughly $300,000, that adds it back in, and we end up with approximate cash needs of about $1.7 million. And if you add in or estimate our 2019 and 2020 accumulation, we're about there. So there's no way we could cash flow Robins Island if we've got these other obligations that we have to take care of. And that would get us just to the end of the design stage. You know, plans and specifications are done, and we're just sitting waiting to then go out for bids. So we're ready, it's on the shelf, and we could take off anytime. So that really was, in my mind, after I started putting the numbers together, that was something that I felt finance and the full city council needed to have that understanding, that there were some assumptions that were made, and I'm all for assumptions, but they're low. And then you have the economics of the situation, which makes it even go lower. So we're just flirting with, can we continue on with all the projects with cash flowing it on a monthly basis? I think we can. I'm not seeing any glaring, you know, red flags. It's going to be close, but I'm okay with that, actually. But we can't go into construction, and we probably won't do any more stormwater construction, because that's cash up front, basically. And that happens, you know, that's relatively smaller projects and can happen relatively fast. So if we just focus on the getting the soft cost done by the end of this year, I think we're good. What it does not include is the City Hall Community Center project that I pulled out, because we haven't really started that as much as we have, like, for the event center and Swanson Field and the other projects. Because I kind of heard the city, you know, some members of the council say, well, maybe that's one we just have to wait, you know, a little bit before we work on that. But if you wanted to include it, obviously you'd be talking about another $500,000 that if you wanted to get the plans and specs done, so it can be ready. So when you say time to go, we can do it. It would just add another $500,000. Now I say just another $500,000. That's a lot of money, but when you're talking $30 million worth of projects plus City Hall at 8.5 plus another 3.5 for your normal street projects, $500,000 is almost getting to the point of being within the plus or minus of rounding off. Yeah.
Okay. I just want to ask Mr. Granitz, is there anything else you want to say right now before you take any questions?
No, I think that's pretty well sums it up. Steve, did you have anything that I missed on that?
No, I think that's a very good point to stop. You know, based on the questions, we can maybe go into, you know, why we have Doug on the line with us, and just invited them so that they keep in the process and know where we're at. And we're doing some projections to in a number of different scenarios. So I kind of wait to see where the questions go.
Okay, thank you. Go ahead, Councilmember Osmus.
Thank you. Okay, so my first one is, if we don't do the community center City Hall, and that was on the I want to say referendum on the local optional sales tax question, are we in violation of something if we don't do one part of the projects? And then my second question is, and I'm guessing, I think I know this one, but if we can't extend, if we didn't make enough money in the 13 years, we can't go 14 or 15 until we raise that money. And then given, because these are unprecedented times with the COVID and the economy, does anything like other recessions, does that ever come into play? Okay.
Go ahead, Administrator Granitz.
Yes. Your first question, is it a violation? I think the answer is if you were to not do it at all, may still not be a violation because things can happen. Okay, you know, so that's the first answer. But my second answer, which is probably more appropriate, is that because we didn't do it on year one is not a violation. We could do it on year three. You know, we could delay it and still do it. And so that, you know, we're not saying we're not going to do City Hall or we're not going to do the community center. We're just saying we need to get the first slug through first. Okay. And City Hall kind of came second. So there's no timing thing that is restricting us to say up to year 10, we could do the community center. So that's, you know, that's
important. Thank you. I understand that. But what if we absolutely aren't going to raise enough money? And so that $2 million that was supposed to go to the community center has to get used because we didn't figure in parking lot costs for the event center or for Robbins Island. And that $2 million gets eaten up, or because we've had to delay some of these projects, the costs go up for what we had estimated. And that $2 million can't go towards the community center. Is that allowable? And I guess that's a what if because we're not there yet. Yep. So I get that.
Okay, the answer to that is I've asked the city attorney to respond to that very question. Because even amongst the projects, let's take the athletic field and the event center. They're actually talking amongst themselves about saying, well, if we have less money in the long run, maybe we should go together and do something that addresses both of our needs, but maybe it's only one project. You know what I'm saying? Maybe it's 80% of this and 80% of that. But both projects get done, but they do it jointly somehow. So there's conversations like that going on, and that is legal. From what I've seen in past sales tax projects. But let me take one step ahead and answer your number two question. Steve and I have been talking regarding maybe an extension of our 13 years to maybe 16 years, you know. But I think that would require going back to the state legislature and saying, due to these times that we find ourselves in, our plan was not achievable. We need 3 more years, or we need 4 more years. And then we'd have to, my personal belief is they would say, totally understand, you know, and we'll get a bill put through extending yours from 13 to 16 years or whatever it might be. But I think we need to maybe even get through this to see how long it is before we say we need 2 years or we need 3 years or maybe we need 5. I don't know. But at some point, we need to contact our senators and representatives in St. Paul and say, here's the problem. You guys are talking about it right now with the current local option sales tax projects. You know, there's many cities going in there right now saying, hey, I want some of that too. And everybody's going like, yeah, this is really a bad time, you know, being the economy the way it is. How do you even calculate how much you're going to receive? Nobody knows. Okay, so Steve and I have been talking about this already. And I think we just need to have a plan, I think, from the city council out of that total review of the finance of the city, whether it's street or local option sales tax or city hall, all of that. That's one thing that, you know, we'll need direction from the city council and say, and by the way, at some point in the time, we want staff to alert us to when we should send our request to Baker and Lang and say, we need your help. Now we can talk to them right now and tell them we're likely going to be sending you a letter, and they'll say, when you get to that point, I'll help you, you know? So that's kind of where we are on what can we do, you know, from 13 to 16 years. I don't have a definitive answer, but there is a mechanism to do what we want to do.
I guess that answered my question as far as if it was even possible to go past the 13 years. Because, yeah, I know we're still kind of waiting for the October, November, December, possibly some other funds coming in that might raise that percentage up a little bit from what the county took in. And when we're talking about whether it's the 63% or 80% or whatever, we haven't gotten to the point yet where we've collected everything we think we're going to collect from those 3 months, correct?
I would defer to Mr. Olkin there.
Some of the discussion at the last finance meeting, we talked about, you know, the interstate sales and out of state of Minnesota and some of those, and some of the excise taxes. Now, they would be very small, I would guess, because that passed the legislature before, and so they should be all ramped up. So it would only be that portion that would need to ramp up, which would be probably pretty small in nature.
Okay, I was kind of hoping for a larger amount there, Steve, but I was going to bring that up because that was the holiday season. If we were ever going to hit our mark, that was the three-month period. And obviously, we haven't even seen what, you know, January, February, March is going to look like yet, which is going to be awful, and the next 3 months. And so I can understand that we're going to be a year or maybe even 2 years out before we really see the deficits that we're going to be incurring. And then that is obviously when we're going to have to go to the legislature and not 5 years down the road when they're going to forget about this that happened in 2020. But
go ahead, Mr. Gramitz.
Yeah, and just expounding on that, If you look at what we've been doing, and that is calculate a local option sales tax revenue flow and say, what can that support? We're going to have to do that again because the lower revenue stream may not support like all $30 million. Well, we know it won't. Okay. It's not going to support all $30 million worth of projects. And so, if we said we want to look at our revenue stream and then say Swanson Field and Robbins Island are two projects and they amount about $5 million, is that revenue stream enough to at least cover that debt service? And what I mean by that is then we'll break the local option sales tax down into, we were thinking two issues, but it might be more than two issues now. So the first question is the revenue stream enough to cover those two projects? And the reason I identify those two projects is because both Swanson and Robbins Island, after they're done, do not increase our operating costs substantially. They're more capital projects that we'll just continue kind of to keep on doing what we're doing. It just will be nicer. Okay, and so if you look at the event center, you build a $10 million event center, and you might have an additional $250,000 in operation costs, utilities, staffing of custodians, you know, supplies, etc. And so these two projects here, Steve and I have talked about it, and they're actually easier to do than those brand new facilities because they come with extra baggage that puts pressure on the tax levy. So that's what we've been talking about in-house. And so that was, you know, I think part of the reason Doug is here is so that, you know, he gets an idea of what we've been thinking. And I know Steve has had some conversations with Kathy and Doug on this, on how do we do it, still move forward. Just don't retract and pull all our tentacles in and just say, we're going to ride this out. How can we keep moving forward? And so that's the discussion Steve and I have been having, and I know he's been having with Kathy and Doug.
If I could just add to that, Madam Chair.
Go ahead.
And Brian makes a good point about the Robbins Island and Swanson Field. in effects on the operating costs. And it may even be beneficial in Robbins Island's case because of the condition of the parking lots and some of those types of things, and the bid prices that we're receiving on our street work at this time. And the majority of that work is bituminous and road work. So in that regards, it might be beneficial. And we have been talking with Baker Tilly on a $5 million issue, which those two would add up to if we had to. And that's about a $475,000 annual debt service payment. And we've done some other scenarios as well, too, that we'll be bringing before the council on how much if, as Brian was alluding to, if we get $100,000 a month or if we get $150,000 a month, how much debt can we issue and at what times will that be able to be retired? So that's why we, again, had Doug and Kathy, and the conversations have been so that they kind of know where our conversations and where the council is coming from.
Thank you, Mr. Elkins. I'm going to just ask a question here. So I have a couple of questions on the information that Brian gave us, but it feels like it might be a time to transition to Mr. Green here so that he doesn't have to stay with us the entire meeting if he doesn't want to. But in my conversations with staff and looking at just serving on the Invest in Wilmer Committee, I had asked Mr. Elkins when he was looking, and he had shared that they were looking at scenarios, but to also look at $2 million if we're afraid to encumber our tax base with the cost of it. So what does a bond look at $2 million or $3 million or the $5 million? And so I think, again, just with that concept of let's get the information in front of us to help make an informed decision. And I think the other thing too is to look at the timing of when our decision should be. I know on some of the webinars I was on this week, there was really an encouragement to wait for the budget numbers to come out to see what the state is going to do. You know, will we get our LGA? Will we do some of those things? And I think that's like the first week in May. And so I'm not sure that it's encumbering us a whole lot to make sure that we're crossing some T's and dotting some I's at the state level. But I'll defer to Mr. Gramitz and Mr. Elkins. Is this a good time for Mr. Green to share his information?
I think if Doug has some comments, and so that he can have the majority of his evening, just maybe to let us know that we are in conversation and any kind of thing of what the markets are doing.
Yeah, and I just wanted to step in before Doug and just say, if you heard what Steve said, was that $475,000 would be like a $5 million bond issue. And at 100,000, we got 1.2. So, you know, we're kind of like double covered. So I personally think that a $5 million is doable, you know, just, you know, trust me, you know, but I think it's, you know, the 5 million at, you know, $500,000 worth of debt, we're going to have more than 500,000 in sales tax coming in. You know, in a year,
no matter what
right. happened. So I just want to go on record as saying, Steve fleetingly threw that out there, and I just want to nail it on the wall and pin it so everybody understands that I think that's doable. You know, we could even do double, but we don't have any projects that are $5,000 more. You know what I'm saying? So doing five is safe. Okay, Doug, go ahead.
Well, thanks. You know, I don't think I really have any more to add. You know, we can, it's very quick to give you, you know, what those annual payments are on $2, $3, $5 million dollars in, if we borrowed, you know, did projects, excuse me, worth $2 million, $3 million, $5 million. We know the term. I would go back to your comments about, you know, can we extend it? Yes, it would take action of the legislature. It would take a change in one word. Right now it's the lesser of, what, 13 years or $30 million. It would just be then just the greater of. So there wouldn't be a time limit. Maybe that's the way to do it. I would agree that that's probably not going to be a hard sell of the legislature. Nonetheless, I mean, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Obviously, the longer we have to wait to do these projects because of the annual sales tax revenue coming in lower, we're, you know, we're subject to construction inflation as well. So that $30 million today is going to go farther, you know, today than it will, you know, for here on out, that $30 million does less. So that's obviously one way, you know, to look at it, in addition to what increases operating costs, what's just, you know, what's quote unquote shovel ready to do right now. We have seen construction costs across the board. And that's what you'd expect. Commodity prices are so down. A lot of these street projects are coming, just like yours, coming in better than anticipated. So, you know, all those would, you know, lead you and want you to do all these projects now. But if there's no revenue to pay for it, there's no revenue to pay for it. I mean, it's a mute point. So I guess the bottom line is all those factors and all those things that you're talking about, it's good to hear. It's what we're thinking about too. I mean, we're on the same page. You talk about information. We can provide any information to you clearly. It's just, unfortunately, it's just math. So we'll just lay out what those assumptions are. And I would agree if there's no way that you're not going to have $400,000 a year going forward, even if we stayed shut down for the next few years. You know, you would have that alone in sales tax revenue. So that's not an option or a concern.
If I can just comment, I think information is power for us. We have to sell it to our council members, but also to the community with why we are choosing to go ahead when we don't see the revenue right now. I think that's important, and I think there are some justifications there, and I'm hearing that from both Mr. Grammitz and Mr. Oakens and from you, but I do think it's our responsibility to be able to have those options available to make the best decision, and so I thank you for that information. I had one question for you. Are you seeing any fluctuation in the bond markets with the oil prices, et cetera, in the last few days, or are we still staying consistent as with what was shared in your email?
Well, I guess I'm not sure what email you're talking about, but the municipal bond market is, for the last week or two, just functioning just great. Interest rates are back down below where are right in line where they were when all this started, and then they shot up and now they're back down. Highly rated general obligation bonds are selling, you know, a couple a day in the state and dozens, you know, throughout the country. And they're pricing all together. So when people are bidding, you want to get lucky and have somebody make a mistake and have a really low bid. But when you see them all together very close, you know it's a good functioning market, and that's really important. So, you know, things can change, but it's a really functioning market right now, so we're in good shape there.
Go ahead, Mr. Oakens.
I think Audrey, you and I had a good conversation just before the meeting started about when these types of situations or conditions that we're dealing with today is when we're talking about something, it is as it is today, and it may be different tomorrow or next week or the week after. And so that's kind of what we looked at when we were looking at the bond market before. It had gotten to a point where there wasn't anybody buying, where now it is stabled off. And so we just have to keep on top of it and keep watching it and get the current information to you as we know it as of the time that we're talking.
Mr. Grammitz, any comments?
No additional comments.
Okay. Any of the other council members have any questions of Mr. Green? Councilmember Plowman.
Thank you. Kind of a question and then probably a statement. I think it's important that we clearly delineate what projects exactly we're talking about, because And that's my question, but then I'm going to make a statement, the risk of sounding melodramatic. I mean, the reason that we're talking about this right now, and the entire topic needed to be discussed, we all know that, but the reason that we're talking about it right now and like this was catalyzed on Monday by the Robbins Island project. And I was a little bit blown away by the fact that we caught flack for deviating from protocol by sending this to finance. And I'm sitting here thinking kind of like, how could we not? Because everything about the economy and everything about finance and how we move forward in the future of all these projects has kind of changed. The fundamentals of this stuff has changed. And so I kind of figured it was our responsibility to do something like that. And so, like I said, the fact that it was kind of like, well, why are we going to deviate from procedure and not just kind of move this along? It kind of surprised me, because there's others with, you know, with a lot more knowledge and a lot more experience than I, but yet I'm sitting here thinking, how can we not have further conversation with regards to the finance committee, but then also with all these projects as a whole? And so I want to be sure that we're all on the same page, that now we're talking about all of these projects and we're not singling any of them out individually in terms of having different procedures or different protocols or assumed protocols or whatever for the financing of these. And then we need to clearly delineate that, like I said, for the rest of the council, as well as for the community, because I'm getting questions, you know, you could just imagine, I'm not gonna go through the list of them, but questions about, you know, why the Robbins Island project would be different than all of the others, and so on and so forth. So if that delineation could be made, I think that's an important step that we could take, step one, and then continuing on with this conversation. Thanks.
Thank you, Andrew. I don't know if anyone has a comment to that, or if there was any question back, but I think that was our goal, was to try and get access to the information to help us make an informed decision. And I think back to Mr. Granitz's sheet that he has here, I think it lends itself to that. So does anybody else have any other questions of Mr. Green? I'm not hearing any, but I just want to say thank you, Chairman. I'm sorry, Rick, I can't see you. So go ahead, Rick.
Oh, I can see everyone. So, Mr. Green, if we do Robbins Island and Swanson Field this year and even pay for the stormwater, that the project that we've incurred money on, would we put that in with the street bonding, or would we have to bond separately?
Well, good question. You could do both. We're kind of leaning towards two separate issues. And the reason why you could do both is because they're a general obligation and they have the same tax status. They're tax exempt. And so, yes, you could combine them. But $5 million is I don't know this for a fact. That might be a little steep for local banks to take on. You know, we're talking about doing $3 million street project with the local banks. So I guess I can't answer that if they could take it. Maybe Steve has a better idea.
Go ahead, Mr. Elkins.
Well, I think, you know, what we've talked about and what we've done before is have done two different issues and the timing was the same. So they parallel each other to save on costs as far as issuing them and stuff, but they are still two separate issues. And so to keep the sales tax and in compliance with the statute and everything, it would probably, my recommendation would be two different issues, but they could be done at the same time moving forward.
Yeah.
Issuing costs.
Because I was thinking saving money, admin or whatever, the bond expense if you did one, but if you can do it at the same time, that'd be great. But you know, Robbins Island, they're finalizing their plan right now. I'm supposed to be at their meeting, so they'll be ready to go. And I'm not sure if there's going to be any baseball this year. So, I mean, it'd be great to get it going so it's ready for next year. And Robbins Island is ready to go. So I think we need to do those two projects. The event center, I'm not sure what they're doing there. There's a lot of squabbling going on, and they're not ready for anything yet. So I would proceed with Robbins Island and Swanson Field, and if we had to even pay for the stormwater project that we've already said we were going to do and incurred expenses. So that's my take.
Thank you, Rick. Just a question on a clarification on that. If we were to do one, I guess the concern that I have is the delineation of the bonds for the local option sales tax projects are meant to be paid for with local option sales tax dollars. And the concern that I have is that we are not encumbering our tax base, you know, in that process to pay for those. So what happens when you put it together? How would you do that if that was something that you tried to go out to the market and do it all in one? Go ahead, Mr. Grams.
Yeah, I think my recommendation falls in line with Mr. Oakens, is that we would do our street projects in a standard GO, general obligation, backed by the full faith and credit of the city. And then if we were going to do both of the other two projects, at $5 million, we would sell, you know, a $5 million issue, whatever that might be. But that's a revenue bond backed up with the full faith and credit of the city. Okay, so it's like having a double diaper. You got the revenue stream, plus you've got the taxing authority of the city. So I think what Doug was saying before was, yeah, they're both tax exempt bonds, and that's all true. But we do have different sources of revenue for each one, except that the sales tax bonds have the second level of security for the bond buyers. And that's what brings them kind of together, but I would prefer them to be apart. I'd prefer to do our normal GO street projects on one issue and our revenue, sales tax revenue projects on the other issue. Just to keep them, in my mind, simple. Accounting-wise, you guys probably have that all figured out. It makes no difference. It's just a different page on, you know, in the accounting ledger. But for me, it makes life easier to understand. So those are just my thoughts.
I would say it's not a big. It makes sense to split them up. And Rick, you're correct. Yes, that is true. There are some administrative savings, very little though, very, very little. So not worth combining them just for that reason.
Councilmember Osmus.
In the $3 million that we bond for the street projects, is any of that the local option sales tax water mitigation issues being covered under that $3 million?
No.
Go ahead, Mr. Elkins.
No, none of that would be under the local option sales tax.
Okay. Any other questions, Mr. Green, or any other comments? Mr. Gramitz, you look like you want to say something.
I do, Steve. What I heard you say was, no, none of that is covered under the local option sales tax. I believe it's the other way around, correct? It is covered?
I believe the question from Councilman Osmus was, were some of the costs in the street program being covered by local option sales tax? There's really no stormwater work in the street projects, to my understanding. So there would be no local option sales tax that would have to cover any costs in the street program.
That's clear. Thank you.
All right. Good. We agreed on that. So, Mr. Green, any other comments you have or?
No, I don't. I appreciate the opportunity to be here.
All right. Thank you so much for being here, and we'll look forward to working with you. Mr. Elkins.
All right.
You Bye.
I just want to thank Doug, okay. Yep, for coming and joining us.
Same time, same place 2 weeks from now.
Yeah. We'll see you again, right?
That's right. All right, bye.
Okay, just a second here. Oh, Mr. Fagerly, Councilmember Fagerly, I can now see you. So, hello. So, I want to go back to the sheet that we were talking about with Mr. Gramitz, and I have a couple of questions there, but my first question is in regards to the City Hall Community Center project and where we are with the, I believe we authorized the signatures on that, but where are we from encumbering costs on that? I know that the mayor had made a statement about that being put on hold, but that is not something that the council has dealt with. So just looking for your guidance with how we should be looking at that and where we're at with the construction manager and the architect.
Committee members, basically the architect and the construction manager have understood that the city is working towards getting a signed contract with them. The construction manager is well versed in this and anticipates that this contract may not be totally signed maybe for 6 months or longer. He knows how it works. He's done it before. The architect is basically on hold right at this moment in the same mode as the construction manager, not doing a whole lot, not incurring a lot of costs, because we are also still working on getting their contract put together in the same manner as the other ones. So from the local option sales tax perspective, we've got the construction manager contract and the event center contract. Those have been signed, and we're working on the other projects, including City Hall Community Center project. So it's in the hands, of the city attorney and also the architect's attorney to get the wording put together and put the rest so that we then can sign. But the City Hall architect is getting information from those communities that we visited, floor plans, layout, kind of some of the things that we liked when we went and visited them and said, oh yeah, we liked having that extra office out in the hallway, maybe for council members to meet with constituents, you know, kind of a thing. So he's capturing all of those floor plans, and he'll be putting them together, you know, obviously to have a discussion with both the City Hall Task Force and the Community Center, you know, subcommittee to talk about those things that we liked, so he gets a better idea of what he needs to include in the design. So that's where we are. We're working on the contracts, and they are working towards something, you know. It's not going as fast as maybe the event center did, but they are working. But they do know that we could call them up at any time and say, okay, it's on hold. They've all been apprised of that fact.
So that's, I guess, part of my question. So will the council have the opportunity to take a formal vote to put that on hold? Would that be helpful with where we're at with them? Or, you know, you made a statement that there's some council members who've made that statement, but I've only seen it in writing from the mayor about putting it on hold. So I'm just curious with how we're going to deal with that.
I would anticipate that this will be an item for discussion when all city council members are talking about the global financing of the local option sales tax, City Hall, the public works or the street department projects. When they look at everything, they'll have to make decisions. What's on hold? What are we going ahead with? What are we just going to get all the projects through the design stage and ready for bidding? You know, that's the direction that staff is going to need to pass on to the architects and the construction managers. So it's going to have to come from the city council.
So my other comment would be, you've made a statement that the architect is doing some work, so we should assume that we will see some costs incurred up front here, even though we might put that project on hold?
Yes.
Okay.
Because initially, or essentially, when the city council you know, selected the architect and approved contracts, you know, the mayor and administrator signed contracts. That was the green light, basically, to, okay, let's get this thing rolling. Shortly after that, when that happened, I put the caution light out and I said, don't be all running, you know, to the gate to, you know, to try and get this project up and going. Keep it on the low side. I know you want to do some things, but there, because of the economics, what's going on in our state and our country, we may have to put a delay on this. And I didn't just select City Hall. I selected all the architects and all the construction managers and alerted them to that. So everybody's on the same page.
Okay, thank you. My other question was, and I've heard you make a few different statements, but I think in your documentation here, you talk about us completing the projects through design stage. But I'm struggling with that one from the standpoint that I'm also hearing you say, and I know that that members of the committee have expressed a concern about whether we can truly afford those projects out there right now. And so why would we want to take it to design stage if in your statement you made, you know, maybe we have to look at one project versus the other. And so I guess my concern from those projects out there would be that we were looking at a master plan for locations of properties. But I'm just concerned that we're being pushed to take this to the design stage when we might have to put this on hold for 3 years or 5 years. And so if you could help me understand that statement about completing that, and is that more from a cost standpoint of what we've already spent, or just help me out there?
Okay, it's not necessarily from a cost standpoint. It's just looking at the financials and saying that our expected or anticipated revenue stream is adequate to cover that first year of design. You know, it's like saying I've got $100, I'm going to call up my architect and design my house, but I don't have the $50,000 to build the house yet. But you can have it sitting there so that when the time comes, you can then take that design and bid that project out and get going. You know, so it makes a nice cutoff point. And based on the numbers, it looks like it's going to be close, but it looks like we have enough money to make that happen. Now, on the other hand, you know, the bigger projects weren't going to be done until next year anyway. They're going to be bid out, you know, in the spring of 2021. You know, the event center was not going to start this year. That, you know, so it just makes a nice through 2020. I think we've got the money to get us to the design stage on all the projects. And on two of the projects, we could probably sell bonds, Robbins Island and Swanson. We could sell bonds and have the cash flow to pay those off in 2021 and 2022 and 2023. So that's, we're just kind of laying out what makes sense. Because if we put a priority and said the event center has to be number one, we do nothing, absolutely nothing, until we get the event center started. That's a $10 million project. We can't cash flow that, you know, we can't cash flow that in 2021. I don't think we'll have enough money to cash flow that, but we can do the smaller projects. So we're just trying to lay it out to move forward and to get us to a point that makes sense to say, here's all the paperwork, it's all done. The next step, if we want to move on, is bid that thing out and get it going. So putting you in a good spot is all we're trying to do.
So I'm going to keep my finance hat on, but also my Invest in Wilmer one. And one of the concerns that we've had is that we've not seen any budget information for any of those projects. What would the event center budget be? What would the domed field be with that? Can we afford to do those? And as much as we're laying out the design of the project, is that not somewhat whether you can afford to live in those facilities when we're done? Should that not be part of the conversation with whether the design is complete or not?
Are you talking about ongoing annual budget costs, Audrey?
Yes. Those questions were asked at the the Invest in Wilmer committee that I served on, and we were told that we would be getting those in the process of the architects designing. And so if we're talking about going through that whole process, then that would feel like to me that the operational cost, because I've heard that from committee members out there with the question of could we even afford to operate them right now. So that's my question with how we are proceeding and how far we should go in the design process with whether it's real to design it or not. So
okay, I take it from a different perspective, and this just basically just comes from experience of having gone through this before. Nobody spent much time talking about the operational costs of a 2-sheet ice arena. Nobody did. But the city council said, hey, the community said they wanted it by a large margin, like 93%. And it'd be ridiculous for us to build it and not operate it. So that year, property taxes went up 8% to pay for the operational costs of the facilities that were constructed. And you didn't hear a peep out of the taxpayers because they said, we were the ones that said we wanted it. And so I believe Wilmer is in the same boat. Granted, you probably didn't have 93% approval rating, but a majority of the people said, we want it. And the unspoken side of that is, and we'll pay for operations, because it makes no sense to build it and then put a padlock on the door and say, we can't operate it. So that's my philosophy on this, rather than say, we need to have all the information up front so we know what's going to happen. I do appreciate having the architects put together that operational cost for us. You know, and we're not there yet. We haven't got that information, but I would anticipate that it's going to be very similar to other facilities that we have: heating, air conditioning, you know, ventilation, janitorial, you know, custodial supplies, water and sewer. We really probably have a good idea of what it's going to cost us. I know that the park and rec director has contacted other communities that have the inflatable dome. He knows what it costs to operate the inflatable dome. They're out there. All you get to say is, what's it cost? And they go like, well, it's like $45,000 a month. Of all the facilities that are out there that we're building in Wilmer, the dome is the highest annual cost to operate by far. And that's something we already have. We know what that cost is, and we can extrapolate an additional 12,000 square feet based off the 10,000 square feet we already have, kind of a scenario. So I think we can get to those numbers even before the architect gets to them if we just apply ourselves and just say, let's do some extrapolation here and figure it out.
I appreciate that, and I agree with you with that. I think the other thing, it goes back to Councilmember Osmus's question at the beginning of, you know, what happens if we don't do this? We've got 13 years to do these projects. So from a fiscal standpoint, and when you look at our community right now, how quickly can we do that this community is ready to absorb the operational costs? And so back to my original question and some comments that you made too about changing the design, because we can't afford to do it, you know, back to, should we be designing the projects the whole way? That's the question that I have right now is, you know, and it sounds like the architectural dollars are pretty much spent already, but it's kind of that same thing of, you know, where we're at with Robbins Island is, you know, are we trying to get this done so the committees are done, or are we trying to just take a recess here until we can afford to do it and then look at the projects again?
Yeah, I fall on the side of let's be proactive. Let's see what we can get done based on the revenue stream, because like I say, we can't build the event center. The revenue stream will not support $10 million. But what can we do? And that would give, I think, hope, you know, that the other projects will continue. But keep in mind that every year that goes by, you got one less year of revenue stream unless we can extend it, which I believe we'll be able to. I have faith in our elected people that they'll say, yep, that was a raw deal, and we'll make that adjustment for you. So I think initially we can do what we can based on the revenue stream and then work in the other projects as we can. But the city council ultimately has the vote on this, and they can say, we're not doing nothing until we do all of it. And that's a perfectly fine position too.
Thank you, Brian. I'll go to Julie in just a minute here. I just wanted to make the comment though that, you know, I think the community is going to be somewhat surprised at the amount of soft costs that we're having to absorb right now. I get it. I understand it from that standpoint. And my goal is to make sure that there's enough information available to all the council members to help them make a decision that's right for our community. So that's, I think, some of my reasons for asking the questions that I do, because I think those questions are being asked out in the community also. And so with that, I'll go to Councilmember Osmus.
Okay, my two cents is I think it's going to be important to have the projects laid out and ready to go so we know what it is that we're going to do. Because I just, even on the Robbins Island project, at least now knowing that each one of the shelters is going to be worth $250,000, that helps me make a decision that if we don't have this $500,000 or that needs to go towards another project, maybe we can do the roads and we hold off on the shelters, because what they have there is adequate. They could use it. And I can maybe see some of that same analogy working for some of the other projects, that maybe there isn't enough for the concession stand, but we can go ahead with some of the other part. That's, to me, that's going to help me make a decision about how we go forward on the different projects. And unless we have the architectural drawings and know what it is that we're dealing with, I can't, in my head, make up those decisions.
I don't disagree with you, Julie, but I think the two projects we're talking about, Swanson Fields and Robbins Island, are totally different than the projects out at the Civic Center. So any other comments, Mr. Oakens? Mr. Gramitz?
Yeah, I just have, this is, I'm a kind of a thumbnail mathematician. You know, I look at stuff and I go like, whoa, six times that, you know? So let's just take some of the information that we were given tonight. It was $475,000 on a $5 million project. That's what Steve told me. Is that correct, Steve? Okay. If we were to do $30 million worth of projects, that would be six times that, correct? That's my simple math, that's what we would need for debt service. So if we were to sell $30 million worth of bonds, we would need six times 500,000, or $3 million a year to pay debt service. Am I wrong, Steve?
No, it's just slightly under 3 million.
Okay. And right now we are at, I'm going to take a wild guess and say $1.2 million, 1.5. We're substantially below what's needed to do all the projects. So I guess in my mind, this is enough to make us pause and reflect on which projects can we do if we're going to do any. Do those and work on getting an extension on our local option sales tax so that we can do the rest of them in 18 months or 24 months when the sales tax starts coming back, so that we can generate enough to pay that debt off. So we're just trying to make a logical step-by-step process. What can we do? What can't we do? and go, what, you know, go from there. So to me, it's the council's decision. We'll do whatever they want, and if they need more information, we'll try and get any more. So if you have any questions, you know, that you bits of information you think that would be usable by the council, by all means, get them to Steve and I, and we'll try and get everybody on the same page of what we're talking about as far as revenue coming in and potential money going for debt service going out.
Did we lose Andrew? Is he still here?
I am still here. I'm just via phone. My computer died.
Okay. All right. Just wanted to make sure. So again, I think what we've been talking about has been very positive tonight, just from the standpoint of receiving the information. And our goal is to get access to the information so that the full council can hear this. And so we did agree to do a full council meeting. Is that next week, Brian, when that we're scheduling that, or do you know when it's going to be?
It would be the next finance meeting, whichever, you know, whatever date that is.
So we're not trying to do it before the next council meeting.
I don't know, Steve.
That is a rather short time. The next council or finance meeting would be May 7th. The next council meeting would be May 4th.
Four, yeah.
So we're looking at our regular meeting on May 7th to do this, which will give us time to share the information we received tonight with the full council. And then I'm looking for suggestions from the council members as to what else they think we need to have available to present on that meeting. If there's any requests, then I would ask that staff would send that out to the full council if there's any other requests. But I do think it would be helpful for the summary of this information to be shared with the full council as part of that ask. Any thoughts from Andrew? Councilmember Plowman, any requests, any comments?
Thank you. Well, I don't think any requests, because I think the bulk of the information that the council is going to need to hear is exactly what we talked about tonight. I think our administrator and finance director delivered us the information that basically needs to lead us to draw the correct conclusions, if that's the correct way of saying it. I feel like they delivered the information that basically kind of tells us what we can do, what we can't do, and then it leaves up to us what we should and we shouldn't do. And we got some flex in those areas, but I think it helps narrow the scope. And I think that's really what we needed to do, is instead of having like this 360-degree range of options, we can narrow our scope a little bit and have a bit more realistic conversation for what our realistic options really are. So I'm appreciative of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Plowman. Councilmember Fagerly, any requests, any additional comments regarding the information we got tonight?
No, I'm sure the administrator and finance director will provide us with all the information we need.
Thank you. Councilmember Osmus.
I like the graph or the spreadsheet that you did, explaining that helps me understand some of the finances. And that 5 million bonding at 475,000, I think we had heard that before, and I probably only need to hear that about 7 more times before I totally get that. But that was a key. That's a key piece of information that, to me, it just kind of made me breathe a little easier, thinking, okay, we can do 5 million and we can move ahead with some of these projects, and we're still having some forward motion, even in the times that we're dealing with. And I just, that was good.
I agree with you. I think that would be helpful to have on paper. And I know not all of the council members are in the same place. And so, you know, I think sharing the different amounts would help us to reach the right conclusion with that. And so, you know, that I definitely agree if we can justify to our community the reason why we can go ahead with that, then I think we've done our job. So I'm good with that. And I think having it down on paper is very helpful. So Mr. Grammets, any other requests that you think we need to do for the finance meeting?
I don't have anything right at this moment, but I'm sure as things pop up, between Steve and myself and Baker Tilly, we'll get as much information to you as soon as we get it so that you all have a better handle on what's coming down the pike here.
Okay. Mr. Oakens.
I guess the only final comments that I'd just like to talk or say again is what I said earlier about we will provide all the information we have as of the day that we have it, and that it may change the next day or the next week or the week after that. And we will try to keep it as up to date as we have it. So that's it changing daily now. So that's, I just hope something that people remember.
The other request I would perhaps have is just, that'll be after the state budget is out. And so perhaps if there's anything we need to hear from, you know, the state budget and some of the things that are happening there that would be helpful for us, that might be a good thing to be on our agenda item too, just to review. So I don't have any other comments on our discussion items. Future agenda items are the same as what they were last week, last meeting. I don't know if there's any other requests. Any other council members have any requests for right now? Or I think the reality is that every day is changing, and so it pays for us to stay in tune with everything. So I thank you for your time. Anybody have any suggestions for future agenda items? Any other comments before we adjourn? Hearing none, I would take a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right. I'll second.
We'll be
adjourned. Thank you very much, everyone. Have a good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Stay safe and have a good night.